troops in red coats. The insurrection was led by an American mob of President Donald Trump's supporters, and they wanted his running mate's head. Vice President Mike Pence's offense? He had dared to defy Trump's order to violate the U.S. Constitution in an attempt to overturn the results of the November election. The frenzied crowd had already overrun the U.S. Capitol Police and the Metropolitan Police Department. Now, Pence's life and the safety of just about everyone else in the Capitol that day rested in the hands of the National Guard. "I want them down here, and I want them down here now," Pence firmly instructed during a private phone call with the nation's top military and defense officials gathered at the Pentagon. As this book chronicles, the storming of the Capitol was the culmination of one of the nation's most intense and unnerving election cycles, one that tested the foundation of our democratic principles. I initially set out to write a traditional campaign book that would tell the story of how Trump marketed himself to a second term, or how the same traits that lifted him to victory in 2016 imperiled his reelection just 4 years later. I envisioned this as a deep look at cutting-edge electioneering techniques heading into the quarter mark of the 21st century. I anticipated explaining what those tactics told us about the cultural and socioeconomic dynamics that coursed through our politics. I wanted to document the political phenomenon of the Trump mega rally, from the behind-the-scenes staging to the campaign's collection of personal data from attendees to the motivations of the president's supporters who waited for days outside arenas until he arrived. But like nearly everything with Trump, there was nothing traditional about this campaign, and the story that revealed itself was far more chaotic and complicated. Without warning, a once-in-a-century pandemic forced millions of Americans to stop commuting to work, log into Zoom, and stay away from shops, restaurants, and even extended family members to avoid a mysterious and uncharted contagion. The electoral kinetics shifted just as quickly and significantly. Trump's re-election bid suddenly hinged more on his response from inside the White House to a complex global health crisis than on how his top political operatives would promote his past successes from campaign headquarters across the Potomac River. My expectations changed too. Instead of spending the year on the campaign trail with the candidate I'd covered for 5 years, attending rallies produced by members of his team I'd known for just as long, I only occasionally left my house once pandemic lockdowns started in March 2020. The result is the story of the final year of Trump's presidency, which opens with his historic first impeachment in December 2019 and extends just beyond his unprecedented second impeachment 14 months later. It's informed by hundreds of hours of interviews with more than 150 members of Trump's White House, cabinet, and campaign, as well as friends and outside advisors, and also by my own occasional run-ins, phone calls, and one-on-one interviews with Trump. I traveled to Florida twice after the election, where Trump welcomed me to his Mar-a-Lago resort for a pair of lengthy discussions about the campaign. Together, these accounts reveal the calculations behind the administration's response to the coronavirus pandemic, explain why top lieutenants in Trump world remained in a constant revolving door between exile and repatriation, offer inside-the-room details of the intense battles between Trump and his military advisors over whether to unleash soldiers on civil rights protests in the streets of American cities, and show how Trump spent more than twice as much money on a losing campaign as he had on a winning one. I also spent time with an eclectic group of Trump superfans who regularly slept outside for days to secure their place in the front row of his mega rallies, and whose story